Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
And we're back. Idle Red Hands Mark 2 is here. And how is Mark 2 different from Mark 1? Well, only one of the original hosts has returned. Me, Lyle. And joining me is...
I'm Alan.
And Jeremy.
For people who are joining for the first time, this is a great time to join because it's the start of a new direction. People who are old fans rejoining us, this is a great time because I wasn't going to say anything else. So as I said before, I'm Lyle, and what I've been doing in the past year is pretty much raising a son, changing jobs, now work for a brewery, which is all right.
Nice. Congratulations on everything.
Thank you very much, fake British.
No. It's my Casey Kasem voice. Come on, not British.
All right. We'll be trying out a few voices at this episode.
Just wait until the jersey comes out.
So please vote at the end which voice you'd like Alan to use in future episodes. Mm. Gaming-wise, playing Frostgrave and Netrunner. Mostly, I have to quit my Rifts game. Jeremy and Alan, who are you guys?
I'm Alan, also known as AC Gallagher. I'm an art student who decided to come to Japan and teach English. And in my free time, I still try to make comic books, but it's a work in progress. Also, I'm really into gaming, as I've also been playing Netrunner recently. And I'm really into my new game, Millennium Blades.
Did you say Netrunner?
Netrunner.
Oh, okay.
Did I say Netrunner?
I don't know. We're just going to have to go over again the rules of no explicit language.
We could just insert this word, Netrunner, and put that in its place.
And how about you, Jeremy?
I'm Jeremy, and I moved to Japan after I got a Japanese wife. We have a six-year-old daughter. And in America, I was a cartoonist and animator. In Japan, I run an art gallery and play Netrunner and Frostgrave with Lyle and Alan.
Nutrunner.
So what can people expect from the new Idle Red Hands?
Well, I don't know. We were talking about gaming like you did before, obviously. But also, we were talking about a bit more pop culture and media, how it has been released and accepted here in Japan.
Right. Yeah, I think an overall focus on more the context of Japan and how that changes our perspective, how we see movies later, how we see our pop culture imported and how it's affected.
Yeah, exactly. What we'll be doing is... broadening out the focus of the Idle Red Hands podcast. So not only just games, but also pop culture, as Alan mentioned, and also expanding the types of games that we'll be covering. So more card games, more video games, as well as taking advantage of the fact that we're in Japan a little bit more than we have in the past, talking about, you know, how it relates to Japan. So in our reboot episode, we'll be talking about a reboot in a sense, and that is a review of Star Wars The Force Awakens. 6 months a little late, but I guess we'll be looking at it with 6 months hindsight. So what were your expectations or thoughts of the movie, or what were your thoughts on the build-up to The Force Awakens, like from the announcement?
Originally, I was very skeptical. I mean, I really didn't see how they could do something as wrong-headed as the prequel trilogy. But at the same time, I was worried. I guess when I saw the cast and how young everyone was, I was really worried it was going to be a teen romance drama. Like, you know, there was just... that made me a little worried, just the age of the actors, and they were trying to use them to relate to a new generation, or that, you know, somehow they were going to push us in the wrong direction.
Well, the original characters were pretty young. I mean, I think in the script they're written to be about like 16.
Yeah.
But they're all in their early 20s, I believe.
Right, but we hadn't had the CW and the teen dramas and Vampire Diaries, and we haven't had, you know, such teen-focused dramas, that so I was very cautious, and then, you know, not really knowing any of those actors.
Yeah. More of like you thought it was going to be like a Divergent or like a Hunger Games type of thing.
Oh, I was worried, yeah, because, I mean, there had been such a trend that, and for them to try to attract a younger audience by going...
We're just old.
That's probably what it is. I mean, we were like seven when it came out or something.
Right. Yeah.
So Han Solo was kind of old.
It's an old thing.
Yeah. Actually, he was in his 30s when it was made.
So. Well, we talked about Luke.
Yeah, he was
specifically.
Young. Yeah.
Leia as well.
Yeah.
Wasn't she 18 in A New Hope?
Yeah, 18 or 19.
Princess Leia?
Yeah.
Or Carrie Fisher. Carrie Fisher. I think she's pretty young, yeah. I didn't hate the prequels perhaps as much as a lot of people, so I didn't really mind. I guess I was a little bit skeptical in the fact that it was not going to be George Lucas and that it was going to be J.J. Abrams. I can't say I dislike his movies, but I'm not a J.J. Abrams fan.
I'm with you on that. Yeah. I don't really follow his movies too much. I know he makes good movies.
Well, he makes good movies, but then has difficulty, or TV series, and has difficulty sustaining it. Mm. For example, I really like the first season of Alias, and then it just kind of breaks down as they get rid of the original premise. Or Lost, the first season of Lost is really good, and then it kind of just veered away.
It's always a good setup, but never a good resolution.
Yeah, absolutely. So maybe The Force Awakens would be great, but could he sustain it through the entire series or the new Star Wars universe? And that's with another concern, is that, you know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, it's a success, and it's certainly very ambitious, but now it's like a blueprint for how movies should reboot series. It's not like, let's reboot it with a trilogy, which is ambitious enough, but let's reboot it with a trilogy with a lot of side movies.
It's a franchise.
So, like a real franchise, and whether or not that was going to capture the essence of the original Star Wars movies, I don't know. Well, I didn't mind the trailers, though, when I saw them. I thought there were some really good shots.
Star Wars was always a franchise, though. I mean, like, a lot of these movies were franchise movies, but...
Well, I think the idea of a franchise has changed. To plan a trilogy is pretty ambitious, because you're taking like traditionally a three-act story, and you got to have those three acts in the movie, but now you kind of have to have the trilogy act as three acts as well. George Lucas did have some controls did have people overseeing him in the original trilogy, but still it was kind of like his vision, of three movies, whereas now with the Marvel Cinematic Universe or this Disney Star Wars Cinematic Universe. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, it's more like just like, let's milk this cash cow for all.
Yeah, how much of it is story and how much of it is business? And I know it is show business, but you kind of get a little cynical about it. Yeah,
that brings up a great point. If we want to talk about franchising movies, I personally believe that it goes back to The Matrix. I think kind of created that original model, because it wasn't just a trilogy; it was an experience. They had the comics, they had the art books, they had the video games, they had the animation, and they wanted to put it all out at once. And then I think, was it Chronicles of Riddick? Was it Pitch Black? They kind of did something similar. And then Lord of the Rings, as well as Harry Potter, really got that ball rolling. Once those movies came out, people saw that they want these longer, continuous stories, these installments of movies, instead of just a movie.
I think the Lord of the Rings example would be good if they went and made movies about Aragorn or Strider. Days of Strider, you know, and trying to make those, or like taking something that's mentioned pretty much like they did with The Hobbit, they take one sentence and make it a whole movie. When I saw the trailer, though, I thought the scenes were good. A complaint I had after seeing the movie is like, wow, you show me all the great, the best shots. Yeah. That's the danger of the trailer.
Yeah, because I still remember the effect of the prequel trailers and how we hadn't seen any Star Wars imagery in so long. And those shots that they showed you, and now there's new robots and there's Yoda and oh my God, you know, that was pretty intense. And this didn't have that same kind of, I was so much more skeptical watching the Force Awakens trailer. At the same time, there were very compelling images in it, and you saw familiar things and then enough new things that you wanted to know kind of what was going on.
Well, yeah, there was a stormtrooper guy, and you're like, wow, you're gonna have a stormtrooper main character.
But at the same time, that seeing the Force Awakens trailer, we didn't have the context of the instant reaction on Twitter and the internet, so immediately the reaction was a little bit different, because you're hearing the internet's reaction along with your own, and that was a little bit disconcerting. I couldn't enjoy it as much when I saw the next day people reacting to the race of certain characters, or people reacting, how is this going to work, or you're ruining this. Immediately there was outrage, or people wanted to be outraged about things that were happening to this franchise. So that felt a little bit different. So before I'd even seen the movie, there was trailer reaction.
Yeah, that was strange. Maybe, I don't know, was this the first time there was so much focus on a trailer? Because people are dissecting the trailer much. I mean, yeah. I was like really surprised. And yeah, like you said, people were anticipating and, in a sense, spoiling the movie for you, like telling you how you should feel about things.
Right.
Yeah, and like I think a new big thing is watching personalities on YouTube have their own trailer reactions as well.
I would say the reaction in Japan was a little bit delayed or muted, even though Star Wars was coming out, I think, the same day or almost the same day as it would back home. Mm. And the trailer, certainly, we'd have access to it via online. But you didn't hear much about it in Japan. Our source is like, going online and seeing how North America, for example, is reacting to the trailers.
Well, it's like everywhere, though. I mean, like, seriously, there was like that giant tapestry at Osaka Station in front of the theater. There was a huge...
Eventually. I think the buildup was a bit shorter than it was back home.
The fans were circulating it, but yeah, you're right. It's not... I think we'll get into that a little bit about like the initial release, but just because people were more interested in other things, it seems, you know? Like, not so much Star Wars. Because when Star Wars came out, they had the release of the Detective Conan movie at the same time. Case Closed. And that was the number one grossing movie in Japan that weekend. No one went to see Star Wars.
You took your son to see Star Wars?
I did not. But okay. If I was in that same situation...
Well, I think he'd be a bit young.
He is a bit young. He's a 2-year-old.
Well, you'll only have about 12 more movies to capture that Star Wars experience.
So yeah. I'll have my chance to make him hate Star Wars.
My first Star Wars movie in the theater was the Boba Fett story. Not the Jabba the Hutt movie.
Well, he already watches Star Wars at home. He really likes the lightsaber battles. But no, I'm sorry. Before Star Wars came out, like the first thing I heard was that Disney was buying the Star Wars movies. And my initial reactions were, okay, that's cool. I don't know. I was kind of actually relieved. I was a little bit more excited about it because, one, I accepted the prequels. I was not as into them when they first came out. Yeah, they can have their moments, but I didn't think George Lucas should have directed all three of them. I think he isn't a very good director. I think he is good at concepts, but like they're in this place where no one was afraid to tell him no, and that's a bad idea, and they just kind of rolled with it. It felt like that. And to have Star Wars with Disney, I knew that they would kind of produce a good product. They would produce a decent Star Wars. And
is that a problem, though? In a sense, that you say they're releasing a good product. The movies are products. They're there to be consumed. But they would view it as a product as opposed to the way George Lucas would view it as his baby or his vision, like something he really wants to nurture and get right. Yeah, and maybe that's, you know, there's a lot of criticism with George Lucas about changing the original Star Wars movies, but he's not doing it because he wants to make a movie more appealing to a focus group. He was doing it because he wanted to make the movie closer to what was in his head. So, I mean, I understand what you're saying. I think in most cases, people respond better when they have the controls, and he didn't have a lot of oversight or control in the prequels, whereas with the original ones, I mean, he didn't like it, but he had people telling him, that's boring. You need to edit it differently. But on the other hand, Disney is just trying to make a movie that's going to appeal to as many people as possible. Not necessarily because they're really excited to tell this particular story. They're really excited to get this IP, crank it out, and make a lot of money.
Yeah. So. I mean, you bring up a good point, though. We were talking about that earlier, about how George Lucas made the movies he wanted to make. And that's great. You know, even the prequels, everyone criticizes them, but this is what he wanted to do. This was his vision. And where are we to say that he can't do this? Like, you know, where are the fans to say that, no, this is not how my Star Wars works. But it's not ours, it's his.
Well, my initial reaction to the sale of Lucasfilm to Disney was that he had given up. Mm. Like, Lucas had just given up. He was tired of the criticism. He didn't want to see any more hand-shot-first t-shirts. And yeah, that he was just done. And this was his way to kind of get the final payoff for what he had built, what he had constructed. So it was a little sad. And I did have that kind of apprehension that Disney was going to, you know, this was just one more, you know, IP that they now owned. And they were going to just put it in the pipeline. And it was going to just, you know, start spitting out a major film, a minor film, alternating years like Pixar. Are and like Marvel movies. And yeah, I was a little worried about that because, I mean, that's going to, they're going to be producing a lot of content and a lot of new canon. That's a really big demand for anybody to be doing. And we haven't had that much Star Wars before. I mean, we've had comics and games and things, but nothing that was on the big screen that was a film that we knew that was part of the lore, part of the universe, for sure.
Well, I heard we're going to be dead before they ever finish Star Wars. They have it planned for
years. Yeah. Disney will pass out a spreadsheet, and you're looking at 13 years.
Yeah, again, that's really ambitious and admirable in a sense, but on the other hand, do you really have 20 years of story that you need to tell right now? Right. And why do we need to know your 15-year plan?
And I really think they're thinking about the strength of these IPs and how kind of that diminishing returns of sequels. They have calculated maybe we're still going to be making enough money off the 15th minor film of Star Wars that it's going to be worth it.
I saw Roger Corman explaining, yeah, the diminishing returns of sequels. And when they made their Jurassic Park knockoff, I think it was called Carnosaurus. And he just, like, after it released, you look at how much the next one is going to cost to make plus how much the previous one had made, and you do your calculations and you pump it out. I'm wondering if sequels diminish these days, because when you look at the list of on Mojo and they list the box office, it's not like the first movie that make the most money. It's the second or third or fourth, or in the Harry Potter series, the two-parter that came out at the end. Like, those were the ones that made the most money.
Well, yeah, so. It's no longer just milking the idea, because, like, you know, you make this first movie without the second one or the third one in mind, you know, a long time ago. The second one comes because of the popularity of the first one, but this time it's like you've already planned out your series. With Harry Potter, you know, it had a lot of books to reference, and when the first movie came out, the books weren't as popular. I think the fourth book came out just before the first movie. That's when Harry Potter started to become popular, really, really, really popular, and it just kind of grew from there.
Well, at least in Harry Potter, like, yeah, they had the books to go off of. But at least because of that, you were promised an end or a finish to it. Whereas you look at just using the Avengers as a model, is there any end to this story? It just seems to be teaser after teaser. And it's like, stay to the end and watch the end credits and you're going to see what's coming up next. And I'd be concerned with Star Wars that you might need to reference some TV series or some minor movie just to get what's going on in the main movie. When this new trilogy ends, episode 9, that it's not going to be a finished story like we got in Return of the Jedi. It's going to be kind of sort of finished telling this one character, but there's something on the horizon kind of thing, and you just get that fatigue. And that was my concern, my reaction to Disney. But I can't say I felt really strongly. I do agree that it felt like George Lucas was giving up. But I also thought, well, good on you. You're clearly frustrated by the reaction to the prequels and the reaction to the revisions. So it's best to cash in now. You got $4 billion. That's not bad. I think he's planning to make a lot of, we said, personal projects and that. Gotta remember, this is the guy that made that.
Land Before Time.
I don't think he made that.
I thought it was Spielberg and Lucas with I was talking about
the THX movie, which is the kind of movie that not many people want to watch. But he's also the guy that can make American Graffiti when he wants to. So I think he wants to go back to making those THX movies.
Well, that would be interesting. I mean, George Lucas and social commentary would be very interesting, as opposed to kind of
his social commentary on the fanboys.
Yeah, but it's interesting. So talking about the Marvel Universe, I think that's Disney's thinking is very different from, we're not making like a Matrix trilogy where we know maybe by the third one people are barely going to be interested, but that you have a universe so you can keep making films focusing on different parts of it. And like the Marvel movies, suddenly something will spike, like Guardians of the Galaxy suddenly stands out and becomes very interesting.
The thing is, though, Star Wars was, for us, was the original trilogy. You know, that was our Star Wars. But the thing is, I think it's completely different. I believe Lucas originally wanted, because he talked about having a Star Wars theme park and things like that. He wanted to make it into this franchise, and it has grown into that. And, you know, it could be the Marvel movies, it could be Star Wars, it could be whatever pulp you're into, man. And I'm like, you're right, it is completely a product, but if I want to watch an original movie, then I probably won't go to Star Wars. If I just want to get off on some cool lightsaber battles and some Star Wars music, then yeah, man, I'll go see it. And as long as it's fun and entertaining, I think that's the important part.
All right, so was it? So what are your thoughts on the movies? I watched it in the theater when it came out by myself. I don't know if that colored my reaction. And then we recently watched it on DVD, so it's fresh in our minds. What'd you think? Overall, good movie, bad movie?
It was all right.
Yeah, it was satisfying. I mean, there wasn't anything that was too disappointing. My reaction right away was, wow, that's really bulletproof. Like, they tried to prevent a lot of criticism from, you know, previous fans, new fans, and just how people were going to react. There was a lot of really safe decisions and safe moves and kind of pleasing a lot of different audiences. And that was interesting to me. Very thoughtfully executed, but maybe sacrificing some interesting or, you know, more daring decisions. They made a movie that was very familiar. You know, there were a lot of visuals that looked very familiar, and then a lot of references to A New Hope.
I thought it was okay. I thought it pandered a lot, too much so. And I thought it didn't really feel like a Star Wars movie, but felt like an action movie that is set in the Star Wars universe. And perhaps that could be J.J. Abrams' touch, or it could be the story by committee touch. But I didn't feel that it drew me into a magical world. Now, of course, I'm much older than I was when I watched the original trilogy. I felt it drew me into a reasonably entertaining summer blockbuster, even though it came out in the winter.
Star Wars coined the term blockbuster.
Did they coin the term?
Because people lined up around the blocks to go and see.
Oh, so they coined the term for Star Wars.
Yes.
It's not like in C-3PO.
Yeah, they didn't say, hey, blockbuster. And, no, yeah, the term blockbuster came from Star Wars.
Well, I mean, when we talk about a summer blockbuster, we talk about a safe movie. Studios are making a lot of safe movies these days. They're not going to make a movie that is a little bit out there. And before Star Wars came out, I mean, it was an instant hit. But before it came out, the studios were really, really nervous about it. They thought Damnation Alley was going to be the bigger hit.
What?
Damnation Alley.
Damnation Alley.
Yeah. It's on YouTube. You can watch it. I watched it recently. Actually, you could watch it. I wouldn't watch it. But that's how, even though people say that A New Hope is very derivative, you know, Flash Gordon or Buck Rogers, or even the World War II movies that were out, like Dam Busters, it still was considered kind of a strange movie, or very much a pulp genre movie that wasn't going to connect with a lot of people, and it connected in a huge way. And now studios are even more sophisticated, and data science is more sophisticated. They can try to guess what's going to hit, and they really hit upon the idea of just buying a previously successful IP. That's why we're going to have a new Ghostbusters. That's why we're having, you know, Disney's buying Marvel, or why it bought Star Wars, because those were successful in the past or has a built-in audience and released
people
that.
People want to hear the same stories again and again.
Man. Again, and The Force Awakens was the same story as A New Hope. And I think a lot of people were okay with that, and I was not so okay with that. I thought it would mirror it too much excessively.
It seemed like the safe route to go. I think, you know, so many people were burned by the prequels.
How are they burned by them?
Well, I think...
Because it was different? It wasn't exactly what they wanted?
I think they were just let down by them.
Well, I mean, they can be let down, but burned to me suggests that it was like a bait and switch. Like, they were promised one thing. They go in and they didn't get that. But they got it. They got the story leading up to how Darth Vader was made.
They did.
Or how Darth Vader came to be.
But I guess so many people went in there, they were so excited for new Star Wars movies that it's like they kind of tricked themselves into thinking that they liked it.
Yeah, the interesting thing you said about bait and switch, though, is I think because of the mass appeal of Star Wars in the late 70s, early 80s, the thing that made those movies stand out is they were easy movies. They were easy to understand. This is the hero. This is the villain. There weren't any imperfect anti-heroes. There wasn't anything that was... The morality wasn't difficult. With that in your mind going into the prequel trilogy, you were betrayed because that was not easy to follow, and you weren't sure who was good and who was bad. And it wasn't an easy popcorn movie or easy, something that was kind of easy to digest. It was odd and morally ambiguous and complicated in its political maneuverings, and that is not Star Wars. Star Wars is pretty simple to get involved with, and I think, you know, because we experienced it in our childhoods, that's why we could connect to it, because it wasn't very difficult.
Come on, kids are more sophisticated now. They understand about trade negotiations.
Yeah, the trade
and blockades, sanctions and Senate votes. I mean, come on. What's so difficult about a man who goes back and builds a clone army that's going to come up a couple decades later, and then gets into a fake war with the trade negotiations so that there'll be like a kind of a fake uprising, and then they'll have to vote him more powers so he becomes like a quasi-emperor before he becomes the real emperor, and then he hoodwinks the Jedi Council into attacking him so that he can destroy them. I mean, that's pretty straightforward, really.
I take it back. That is very black and white.
I don't know. I think, I watched it, and I love the music, and it opens, and it's got the crawl. It's very familiar, which people... Yeah, they like the familiarity. But even from that opening crawl, it was like, you know, they've sent their best pilot. And I'm like, well, why would you send your best pilot to do a spy mission? I don't know. It almost seemed overly simplistic to send your best pilot to go do your best spy's job. And then...
I don't know. At the same time, though, it seems a little nitpicky. Yeah, I see what you're saying, but how many pilots do they have?
What was your reaction before the crawl of not having the Fox fanfare? We didn't see it Cinderella's castle, but we had the Lucasfilm logo and dead silence. It was a little
jarring.
Sad. Yeah, it's a little sad because
where's the bum 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 bum?
Yeah, because we always associated with the stars. I remember whenever playing another movie done by Fox, I thought Star Wars was coming on.
Yes, yes. That, yeah, we were conditioned all through the 80s to expect a Star Wars film. And I think that that first horn blast of the Star Wars logo needs, you need to be prepared a little bit. The Fox, that Fox fanfare helped prepare you, at least orally, to receive that. And when it's dead silent and then you just get those trumpets, yeah, it's a lot more, it's a lot more jarring. And I think it's really odd, but it also like makes you very aware that this is a new era of Star Wars.
Well, it was a little bit disconcerting, but then immediately you get the John Williams score and then a very familiar crawl.
Yeah, it was nice to see that again. It was nice to see the title recede into the space.
Yeah, but they've all had that crawl.
Yeah, but it, you know, one prequel's finished quite a while ago, man. Yeah, no, it felt like they were really, it was crowdsourced. You know, I mentioned before, it's like we're doing like this gestalt of when it comes to creating movies because of like the internet fan reactions and stuff like that and what people want to see, so... You know, in that sense, we're going to get a whole bunch of safe movies. But, you know, although they did touch upon familiar territory, like it does really feel like A New Hope in many aspects. I think this was just to kind of bring us in, and I'm really hoping that it will continue in a different direction with the next couple movies.
Well, that's what Abrams said. He thought we wanted to make it really familiar to bring people back into that universe. And then I guess they'll diverge more, but I don't know. It almost sounds very apologetic. And if you're going to cater that much to, or provide that much fan service in that movie, how are you going to, do you think that the fans then are going to give you the creative freedom to do something very different in the second movie?
I think so, though, because they had that familiar territory, but they had the new characters, and they introduced the new characters well enough that we are more attached to them than we were with the characters in the prequels. Mm-hmm. I think that...
It really helped not giving one of the older characters, like Luke, any lines, and killing off Han Solo. Mm-hmm. Just like, were you attached to them? No, forget it. Finn and Rey. It's all about Finn and Rey now.
Yeah, and they're kind of out with the old... In with the new, it was kind of it was definitely doing that whole passing of the torch. Mm-hmm. I think that's
what or the lightsaber
passing of the lightsaber
eventually.
And at some point, I wonder how many parents during that movie were turning to their tween kids, going, "Oh, that was in the there was a lot of the fan service that I think went over a generation and a half's heads." And yeah. They had I don't know those old movies, and so it was there was a lot in there that I think a lot of people missed, and at a detriment to the story, because I think if you could do a non-fan service edition of Force Awakens, I think it would be a much less interesting film, if you took out a lot of the references and things. And so that is a little difficult.
Some of the better lines in The Force Awakens were lines from the original trilogy or a variation of the lines in the original trilogy, which I don't think is a strength of the writing, because it suggests that the original lines weren't the original lines in the sense that original for that movie weren't as good, whereas all the lines like "yeah, that sounds really cool" were the kind of lines that just harken back to a previous movie. And it's interesting you're saying about like the generation gap, because people could say, well, a teenager or a preteen could go back and watch those original movies and still get something out of it. But we especially see that in Japan, is that Star Wars is pretty much for adults. It's not really a kids kind of phenomenon. We were arguing before the podcast the location of the Star Wars merchandise in a very popular chain, and it's on the same floor as the hobby stuff, like kind of the model stuff for adults to buy. It's not on the floor with the toys, the stuff that's for kids. So even Japanese mega fans didn't necessarily rush out to go see Star Wars on opening day. There's a guy in my old office in accounting, he has like a Star Wars calendar on his desk and was really into it. And a month after it came out, I said, "Have you seen it yet?" And he's like, "Oh, not yet. I'll see it eventually." Yeah.
People are busier here. I know some Japanese mega fans that did go see it, so I know people went and saw it.
But people didn't line up like they did back home. First in.
Yeah, I don't think there were sold out shows. And even when my sister-in-law always has a Star Wars iPhone case. And I asked her, "Have you seen the Star Wars movie?" "No, but Star Wars is cool." So that's why she has it. So it's a American pop culture thing. And of course, it's famous. So yeah, that's an interesting reaction, is that people know of the characters and know it's cool and know it was a big cultural phenomenon in another country. But here, people don't relate to it, the same way. an interesting reaction that my wife had when we watched A New Hope, the first Star Wars movie, is she said, Darth Vader's not scary and he's not cool. His helmet looks lame. It's not, you know, Japanese cool. It's not scary. She didn't understand that design. So maybe it was, you know, it was kind of an appropriated look of the, you know, the Japanese style helmet. And yeah, they didn't, she didn't understand what he was so menacing or what was scary about that look.
I wonder about the voice that dubs Darth Vader, because a lot of it is James Earl Jones' voice.
Right. Yes, that's true.
And then sometimes you hear the actors that they use for them. And probably for Darth Vader, they use somebody that out of detective shows where it's a very gravelly voice.
Japanese Kiefer Sutherland.
Stereotypically gruff as opposed to menacing. So what did you guys like and what did you dislike about The Force Awakens?
I liked seeing, you know, a lot of the familiar ships and like the CG versions of, you know, the space battles and things were very satisfying, and the limited use of lightsabers, you know, not seeing, 45 lightsabers on the screen at one time was nice. I mean, there were certain things that felt familiar and it was in a satisfying way. The things that weren't too pandering or didn't feel too much like fan service were satisfying. And the, you know, overall look and the nice mix of CG and real effects, puppets and real locations made it a lot more familiar and made it feel, that was satisfying.
I liked the new characters. I liked Finn. I liked Rey. I liked Poe. I didn't love Poe the way a lot of people have embraced him because I didn't think he was on the screen very much. So I don't know how you can form a strong attachment, but I did think he did well in the scenes that he had. I like Kylo Ren. So the new choices that they made, I thought they made some good choices. And the new people that they introduced, I thought that was good. So I could have stood to see more of that and less of the callback.
There will be more of that. I think the callbacks are kind of almost necessary because unlike the prequels, we do have that these established movies that came right before this. So mm-hmm. Those characters still exist. I think they handled it pretty well, but you do have a point because a lot of times it is just like fan service. Mm-hmm. I guess the things I liked Kylo Ren's voice. I liked the sound of the snowflakes in the end scene and the lens flare. The lens flare was pretty cool.
Hey, you built a whole Star Killer around it. It's just like, you didn't like my lens flare. Oh, guess what? I'm going to scale up the Death Star and it's going to be lens flare. Yeah. You can't even look at it. There's so much flair.
The big thing that I noticed was a lot more art direction and being more conscious of like how images looked on the screen and making them tell some of the story or carry some of the emotional weight, not only having it be music and action. You know, like choosing the weapon to be fueled by a sun meant that it was going to get darker as the weapon got stronger, as it got closer to fire. Mm-hmm. So visually you had this, you know, encroaching darkness that meant, you know, that the end was coming, and I thought that was very satisfying. So there were some really beautiful scenes visually that I don't think we've seen in Star Wars movies before, because there wasn't that level of art direction or that level of thinking about what the frame should look like.
Bringing the fighters or the spaceships down to the atmosphere, I thought gave it a different look. Like you're looking at the TIE fighters versus the Millennium Falcon, but in the atmosphere.
Yeah, and like the X-Wings over top of the lake.
I really like that. I really like that shot. You know, pretty much every time there was an X-Wing or a TIE fighter on the screen, I thought pretty good. But certainly didn't like how the Millennium Falcon was introduced. When that came up on the screen, I just kind of rolled my eyes, where it was like a hunk of junk, which was kind of jarring because this person's a scavenger. Like, Rey's a scavenger in a desert and gets junk to buy her food every day. So why she would be so dismissive of a spaceship that clearly works, it was a bit jarring and just kind of, you know, it's a hunk of junk. Okay, let's go to it. And then it goes to the Millennium Falcon. And I bet you there was applause in the audience. People loved it. But I just thought, that's kind of lame. Yeah. That was introduced.
It was funny. There was almost a choice to reveal a lot of the New Hope elements, like Han and Chewie running onto the Falcon and a lot of the things as surprises. So in that way, it made sense that, you know, the revealing the Falcon was a surprise because so many things, you know, where these characters were going to come up, you know, when you were going to see Princess Leia, when you were going to see Luke, were all kind of surprises in the movie, how they set it up.
The thing is, to go back to the hunk of junk thing, and I think you mentioned that as well, and like how you said she heard of Han Solo, but...
Yeah, right.
But the Millennium Falcon, what the heck is that?
Yeah, well, how did she make... What did he make the Kessel run in? But, she knows that, but she doesn't know the name of the ship or
tarp,
what it looked like.
There was a tarp on it, so you know there was some.
Was there a tarp?
It was, no. It was a little obscured. There was some fabric.
It's dusty.
Yeah. wipe it off. Oh, there's a Millennium
Falcon.
It's not as junky as I thought it was.
My bad. That is a callback. That was a callback because they remember Leia came out and she's like, this hunk of junk? Or no, Luke Skywalker said that too. It's always been called a hunk of junk.
Right, so exactly. But
it's her saying it now.
Sure, but really, I mean, you're absolutely right. It is a callback and it worked for 99% of the audience. So it's a success. Yay. go them. What it is to me, though, I found it very jarring in that here's what would really happen in the story is that a scavenger who has nothing is not going to be dismissive of either of those ships. They might prefer the one that they were running to initially before it got blown up, but that Millennium Falcon was certainly going to be a very suitable substitute because it works and it's going to get them off the planet. So what they wanted to have, like Jeremy said, a reveal, a big surprise, and like you're saying, you know, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, remember what Princess Leia said when she saw it, remember what Luke said when he saw it. So they're trying to do two things and I don't think it worked there. For me, the 1%, the minority, I thought it pulled me out of the enjoying the movie. And I think there's one of the problems I had with The Force Awakens. There's a few times where I'm like pulled out of the movie because either their two objectives clashed or it felt like what was somebody wrote and what somebody filmed were at odds with each other.
Just a little forced.
A little bit.
Awakens?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Like that pun.
That's my running gag. Which is these lines. These lines are always running gags. And the thing is, things like that, the hunk of junk, things like, I have a bad feeling about this,
Then have Finn say it. Finn grows up on a Star Destroyer, and she's like, well, let's go there. And he goes, that hunk of junk? Mm-hmm. And he points to the better one, because he doesn't know. He's basing it purely on appearances. He's not a scavenger. And then that gets blown up, and then he's like, okay, the hunk of junk's fine.
Then again, yeah.
There you go. I solved that.
Great idea. Although Rey is Luke Skywalker, and in A New Hope, Skywalker said that, okay?
Well, I don't think we can discount the George Lucas method of filmmaking where it's poetry, it rhymes, because you repeat it in every single movie.
Well, here's an example of the other thing I'm complaining about, where it seems like one person wrote something and the other, obviously the director, filmed it, but it was like they didn't really think about what the lines were. And that's like, and it's during maybe my favorite scene in the movie where Finn and Poe are escaping the Star Destroyer and that banter works. And then they get into the TIE fighter and it's cabled and then they're struggling. And I forget exactly what the person in the booth says, but they're like, oh, there's an unauthorized exit in Bay 2, and he's looking at the screen, but that control room is right in the bay. So it's not Bay 2, it's that bay, and you wouldn't really go, there's an unauthorized thing, but you would be pointing at the TIE fighter, like, look, this TIE fighter's trying to get out of here.
Well, there was several.
And I could see, the writer wrote it thinking that this control room is going to be elsewhere. You know, there's going to be the bay, and then this control room is going to be in another part of the Star Destroyer. And then the director's like, mash it together, and then nobody went, hold on, this doesn't work.
I don't know, man. Maybe they were just thinking, since there were several TIE fighters lined up, Bay 2 is the second of the bay. Like,
okay, I wasn't really focused on that, but the fact that there is a TIE fighter that's trying to fly out that's still teetered to the thing, and
commander.
He's just kind of like,
he's very professional.
On the screen, it seems somebody's trying to get out of here, and you see a TIE fighter like,
hey, boss, there's a TIE fighter running loose over there. What should we should do? He was professional.
Look, sir,
he stuck to the criteria. He referenced the manual, and he consulted his boss.
Come over and look at the screen here.
As you can see, there's a blinking light in Bay 2 saying that there's an obstruction. Can I sign off on this waiver?
Here's something. I guess I'll be the critical voice. And another thing I didn't like about The Force Awakens, and I think it's trying to do sort of like what the original trilogy is you name drop, but you don't over-explain something. So it kind of draws you into the world by being a little bit mysterious, but you kind of know enough to get through the story. You don't know what the Clones Wars are, but you got, there's a wars, and I guess there's clones in them, and he fought in them. So I get it. That's all I need to know to understand that. So it gives it some history and gives the this galaxy or this world some richness, but it doesn't bore me. And I think the prequels might have like, okay, guess what? I'm going to fill in all of those details. And people didn't like that because they thought it was maybe boring or pedantic. With The Force Awakens, I think they tried to do that, but then they would add in like one thing too many. So for example, they have the Republic and the New Order and the Resistance. It's just hard to understand what the relationship is there. And it's not like, oh, I don't understand, but it's okay. I can follow along and it's kind of mysterious. It's kind of where it's confusing because then people are going, well, who's the Republic? Are the Republic related to the Resistance? If the Resistance is part of the Republic, what are they resisting? Are they like mm-hmm. like rebels? Who are they rebelling against? Because if the New Order is a separate entity, we understood like the Empire was the controlling body and the Rebel Alliance were rebelling against that controlling body. And you're like, what are they? What's the Resistance doing?
Sorry, in the first demonstration of the Starkiller base weapon, you saw the Republic planet destroy the capital planet, and you didn't have any idea what effect that was going to even have on the Resistance and the, you know, it wasn't clear because, you know, they showed people on the planet, oh, there's actually people here and they're going to die, so that felt
bad.
But then, well, how does that affect the story? What is it now? There's no government? What happened? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Just...
Well, I tend to believe that they're trying to destroy the Republic. I think that was Coruscant where the Republic was based.
I think so too. But yeah, you're like, whoa, what is the Resistance? Is the Resistance the arm of the Republic, the military arm? But it isn't, I guess. I don't know. So you're.
I think people went into this. There's certainly been a lot of discussion about this, and there's definitely people out there that get it. However, I think...
But a movie like that shouldn't be something where kind of the premise is something that you need to get. It should just be immediately understood. And in the original trilogy, you immediately understood that the rebels were rebelling against this evil empire. Done. We get it. We see a lot of examples of that in history. And people knock the prequels because, well, we don't really get it about this Trade Federation and the trade embargo. It's too complicated. And I think they let it go in The Force Awakens just because maybe you see Han Solo again and Luke Skywalker and you're like, well, thank you for that. So we're so grateful that you're providing this fan service. We're just going to ignore this huge, complicated political relationship. And like Jeremy said, we're watching something, a whole planet being destroyed, and you're like, I don't get what they're... I get it because I kind of know what Coruscant is, but it's destroying the Republic, and it's bad because I've been told the Republic was good in previous movies. But in this movie, I don't know if that's good or bad, because why don't they target a Resistance planet? Because wouldn't that... Okay, the Resistance is attacking us.
They know where it is, yeah, because they fly there right afterwards.
But in A New Hope, it was like, okay, Princess Leia, you're from Alderaan, we're going to destroy Alderaan. Oh, I get it. You know, that's why it's terrible. You're destroying her planet. Mm-hmm. And that's why she's all torn up about it.
I think, I think that's a good point. But also, they're going into this new series knowing that it's going to be a trilogy. If we're comparing it to the original one, it had more story, of course. The original trilogy wasn't necessarily going to be a trilogy, so they kind of made it have an ending. It had an ending. It blew up the Death Star. The good guys won. Yay, got medals. Goodbye. It was had closure to it. But it still left things open for future installments. This one doesn't have that same dilemma. You know there's going to be three movies.
They destroyed the Death Star Mark III in this. It's kind of the same thing. It's the same movie.
It is the same movie, but...
With the, you know, Kylo Ren maybe got away and you're like...
There can be more complicated plot elements that they can get into later.
Do you think they're going to revisit this Republic-Resistance relationship and destroy it? But do they need to? I mean, can you think of any example in history where you've had such a relationship? You've got... And I'm not saying it has to be a Republic, but you've got two political entities, I'm going to guess, in the New Order and the Republic, who have some sort of detente or like armistice, maybe, I don't know. And you have a Resistance, which doesn't seem to be under the New Order, but it seems to be under the Republic, but it's resisting the New Order. Like, how are they not the army of the Republic? They are the hidden army of the Republic, but they're not hidden at all because the New Order knows they're affiliated with the Republic. I don't know. It doesn't make sense. And I don't think we're going to go into the third movie going, oh, you know, that when they destroyed that unnamed planet in the first movie, oh, the emotional payoffs right now.
Yeah.
They're not going to have that. They're not going to, oh, you know, this asteroid field, this used to be Coruscant. Oh, because the second movie explained all that. That actually hits me here. It's just nothing.
Yeah. And you shouldn't expect, I mean, because there were novels released and comic books and things that were starting to happen before the release and right after The Force Awakens, you shouldn't be responsible for knowing any of that information to be able to enjoy the film.
Oh, exactly, yeah. I think you're right in that they tried to make A New Hope self-contained. And I think with... Then they got to Empire Strikes Back and there was a big cliffhanger. You know, what's going on with Han Solo and is Darth Vader Luke's father? Spoiler.
What?
And they are definitely going to do that. But I think it's less of the idea that they know they're making a trilogy. And I think it's more of this J.J. Abrams mystery box idea where he plants all of these mysteries in his movies. And I didn't like that where...
He doesn't ever resolve all of them.
And then it's not going to be a satisfying payoff. But it was like, Rey, who are her parents? Snook, who's Snook? I mean, at least with
Snokes.
The Emperor... Snooks?
Snokes!
Snokes? Not Snokes? Snooki? I don't know. Like, who named him?
Probably George Lucas's son.
But I mean, in the original trilogy, it was like the Emperor. You knew who the Emperor was. He was the top guy, right? And this is like, who is he? He's mysterious. Okay, so we're dropping all these mysteries. Oh, the lightsaber? Oh, that's a good question. For another day. And you're like, well, why not tell me now? How long is this story? Really? Really? How long is this story?
Yeah.
I might never see you again.
Dude,
just tell me
the
story.
You gotta build up to that reveal, man.
But you don't necessarily have it with a movie like Star Wars. It's not about mysteries. Like, the big reveal of Darth Vader being Luke's father, it's not like they planted the seed is that, who is Luke Skywalker's father, really? I mean, you knew he had an uncle. But they don't go...
They're like, oh,
yeah, your father's dead.
He fought in the Clone Wars.
And he's dead.
And then Obi-Wan Kenobi's like, yeah, I knew him well.
And he's dead. That's what he... So it's not like, I knew him well. I wonder what happened to him. What happened to him? Ooh, that's a story for another day.
I got killed. Father's lightsaber. And he's like, oh, my father was a Jedi.
Yeah, he was a Jedi.
Oh, no. Who was his father? Like, I think that is...
But that's...
Part of that mystery.
That's nice planning, where you go, oh, it reveals the father. It doesn't contradict anything that's said in the first movie, because Darth Vader killed your father. And because he turned into Darth Vader, and you know, this is his lightsaber, and he was a Jedi. He's not a Jedi anymore, he's a Sith Lord. So it doesn't contradict what Ben Kenobi said. It gives you that a big emotional payoff in the end, but it's not like these false mystery boxes where, oh, I wonder who your father is, and Darth Vader in the first movie is looking at a family picture, but you don't see it, or it's obscured who his son is, or something. You know, kind of like, or talking about my son, and it's like, who is your son? Oh, it's a story for another day kind of thing, you know. I don't know. There were twins, you know.
That's payoff in part three.
But do you think
six
in the...
Do you care who Rey's parents are?
Yeah, I want to know.
Do you really care? No, you care because they kind of force it down your throat and she has this thing. I don't care at all. Yeah, and you're like, no, well... Like,
you know, hey, man.
At this point, maybe
this is
not.
A small galaxy because everyone's bumping into each other left and right. So I'm sure you'll have better chance of finding your folks when you get off that planet.
Well, there's another thing. And I know it's pulp and coincidences are part of pulp. But come on, how small is this galaxy? Just like... Or how small was it that planet? There's like one outpost and everybody like, let's crash land near the outpost, fortunately. I could go left, I could go right. Well, actually, I could go any one of four ways. But I'm definitely going to go the way that goes to the one outpost and survive.
This may sound a little cynical, but maybe in this day and age, that mystery box, too many unresolved kind of storyline, works well, because then you generate all this speculation and all of these people online mentioning and
it keeps it alive. Yeah, definitely, right. Keeps it alive between movies.
Even if you're not going to be satisfied by what the movies tell you, you've spent all that time increasing the rankings of, you know, keywords important to marketing that movie. So I mean, I think that that's something to definitely not take for granted, because in this, I don't think we live in a very satisfying age, and I think people like to tear things apart and...
Well, I'm going to disagree a little bit. I think I absolutely agree that this mystery box idea is a great way to sustain something in between the movies. But if you buy an IP like Star Wars, do you really need to use a mystery box to sustain it? And I think it gets into the ideas. Is Abrams is making Star Wars an Abrams kind of movie, whereas he's not making a Star Wars kind of movie. I would say, I mean, it certainly has a lot of the trappings of Star Wars, of course. It, you know, takes half of the script from A New Hope, including the lines, and it makes The Force Awakens. But, and I'm not a fan of Star Trek, but I can watch that, the reboot, and understand that why fans of the old series are unhappy, because it's not...
Are they?
A lot of people are, because it's not really a Star Trek movie. It's an action space movie with Star Trek names. But do you need that for something like Star Wars or Star Trek? You can still stay true to that style of movie. And the style of movie is like pretty simple storytelling, and it doesn't have all of these unresolved things at the end of every movie. I mean, even Han Solo, was not like Han Solo disappeared and everybody was like, where did he go? They actually knew where he was. It's like Jabba the Hutt hasn't. So it's not like, and I went into the room and Han Solo was missing. What? I mean, if they did the thing with Luke Skywalker, it'd be like something like, Luke, I'm your father. No. Cuts off his hand and then they just find his hand in the lightsaber. And they're like, where's Luke? And we find out in the next movie. And it'll be, oh, I was actually here.
And you, I guess they get that from Lost, you know. They always gotta leave you out with those hanging threads.
Yeah, or Alias. It's always like, here's another mystery.
That's good for your dislikes. Is there anything else you really dislike? Or do you want to talk about the things that you thought were cool about Star Wars in Japan?
I do have more dislikes. I like Kylo Ren, the character. It's interesting. I don't get why he thinks Darth Vader is the essence of the dark side, when the story of Darth Vader is someone who conquered the dark side.
He's
and
afflicted by it, yeah.
Yeah, so he's like, oh, I need to be dark for you, grandfather. But if he actually knew the story of Darth Vader, he would realize, like, oh, no, I don't need to be dark for you because you return to the light side. Well, and that's how it would be presented. Like Luke Skywalker, maybe if he's like J. Abrams, Luke Skywalker would be like, oh, and what happened to Darth Vader in the end? Ooh, that's a good question. For another day. And then he did, you know. And then Kylo Ren was like, oh, I don't know what that other day is. I guess he just always stayed in the dark side. No, the story of Darth Vader as it would be presented to the new Jedi was light will always triumph over dark. Take Darth Vader, for example. He was a very powerful Sith Lord, but his love or his whatever conquered the dark side. And that would be the teachings that would be presented. So I don't know how Kylo Ren got out of it that he should be dark.
It's interesting. There's something, and I don't know if this was, you know, just kind of established in the first movie, but it shared some interesting qualities about like how information moves in the Star Wars universe, similar to like a Western movie or a samurai movie. Even though this is set in the, you know, long time ago, there's higher technology, but communication isn't this instantaneous thing, and people are looking at holograms speaking real time to them, and you know, we aren't really like, things are transmissions and there's data on disks, and things aren't transmitted at light speed instantly all over the galaxy. So it's possible that the New Order is this group of fanatics that believe no, Darth Vader never was redeemed, and he, you know, he was he's a martyr to, you know, he died allied to the dark side, you know. Yeah. So it's just but I think that's an interesting aspect that I've always thought about with Star Wars, is they do have this odd thing where communication isn't quite what you think of it as how it works in science fiction, where everybody instantly knows stuff and there's shared knowledge and information. So I always thought that was interesting. So that could actually, you know, be part of it, that you could generate wildly different opinions of events in different parts of the galaxy and have people, you know, acting or creating, you know, political movements or things based around that.
No, I think that's a really good point. And I can definitely see the New Order being in the dark about what happened with Darth Vader in the end, because only a few people were there. There's like Luke Skywalker and him, and the Emperor's dead.
A lot of them exploded.
Yeah. All the other witnesses are blew up on that Death Star. So I can definitely see that, but not Kylo Ren, because Kylo Ren had direct access to both Luke Skywalker, Han Solo, Princess Leia. They don't talk. They don't tell him like what happened. I mean, would talk about Anakin Skywalker fondly, you know,
passing that stuff on.
So I don't see how he would be deceived. And by the way, where did he get that helmet?
Well, he was burned on Endor.
Right.
So,
and then somebody fished it out. And
maybe
Kylo Ren got his hold of it. Yeah.
Mm.
Well, why wasn't his helmet made from that helmet? Why was that a relic? You know, why was he treating that like a religious relic and talking to it?
It's like Jason Voorhees.
Yeah, right. And that's the strange thing. He had the mini guy version of that helmet. Why didn't he fashion his helmet from the, you know, remnants of Vader's?
Because that's a bit ghoulish, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm wearing my dead grandfather's. They're like Boba Fett kind of, right? Remember when the little Boba Fett picked up Jango Fett's head and it just bloop?
And he repainted the helmet and off he went.
Yeah. Yeah, so why doesn't, we were talking about religious relics, like bones were pretty popular religious relics. Yeah. Why isn't he looking at bones? Mm-hmm. Of course, that's not going to play to the audience in Star Wars. Where it's like,
did he have any bones
femur
less, though? I mean, like, I think
he had some. He had ribs. I think he had ribs, maybe. Yeah. Some facial bones.
Yeah.
Maybe it was a skull.
It's still in there.
So are we getting a Boba Fett spin-off movie starting from the decapitation of Jango Fett? It's possible, because that nobody can underestimate the popularity of that character, and definitely Lucas designed everything, including the clone troopers' helmets, to look like Boba Fett. So
I don't know what they are
going to have a Boba Fett movie that's on the list of movies.
They are. They're going to have a Han Solo movie as well, but people don't like a lot of exposition in film. I get it, but do there really need to be so many, oh, what happened to him? Oh, if only we had done this with him. They were kind of like, why can't they just say, oh, you might remember when he like killed all the other Jedi in the thing? Boy, that Kylo Ren. Why did he do that?
That's true. There's a lot we don't know, and it could go very, very wrong as far as, you know, Kylo Ren's history and kind of where he's going from the end of that movie.
But I think Adam Driver does a good job in playing Kylo Ren. Oh, yeah. So that's certainly a success. So they cast the people really well.
Yeah. Well, it was an interesting villain, because he had the insecurity and rage of an internet hater. You know, there was something interesting, like a millennial kind of feel to that character, because he had crazy temper tantrums, but, you know, had the force abilities to back it up. So there was something very interesting about that, and it'll be good to see a new version of him with that left behind, you know, someone that's channeling that rage more perfectly.
I'm hopeful of his arc. I think, even though I really like Finn was probably my favorite character in the movie, but his arc was a bit quick, which is fine for pulp, but also a bit weird how it triggered at the beginning. For one thing, where did that blood come from? Because those blasters cauterized wounds. So did the guy, like...
I told you, he fell over, he hit his head.
He touched his head, then touched the guy. And so he's got that handprint on his helmet. So, I mean, you were saying it was unclear. I think what they were trying to do is show that he's rebelling against, or resisting now, is a new term, against the new order's kind of evilness or cruelty. But you were saying, it's like, is it that, or is it shell shock?
Right, yeah, because he was just...
I think he's been awakened.
He's very, very traumatized.
I think he's been awakened. I think the Force is awakened.
That would fit with...
Or Disney.
And I think the moment when Finn realizes, you know, the First Order is evil and I have to work against them, we don't see on screen, because that's like when he's sent for the reprogramming, reconditioning, he's on his way to that, and then suddenly he just shows up and frees Poe.
Well, I think the scene was when they say, okay, fire on these villagers, and then he can't do it. But because, and this gets back into what I said earlier about one thing too many, like the Republic, Resistance, and the New Order. Okay, one thing too many there. But there was one scene too many, and that was the guy getting killed.
Right.
And him being traumatized by that, because you should just have is, he comes out, I guess you got to mark him just so you can pick him out of the lineup. I was like, oh, it's the guy with the blood hand. And then they say, shoot those people. And then he puts his gun down. I think that was enough in a sense. Mm-hmm. As far as the character arc, I understand what the decisions they made.
Right.
But
isn't Poe the one that kills his friend?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah, here's the thing. Yeah. Poe kills his friend and then he's traumatized by it. And then they're in the TIE fighter. And then it was like, get some, just like killing.
He kills everyone else.
Everyone is. Like, as long as there's no blood.
As long as it's not Poe.
He's just squeamish about blood. He's like, okay, in the Resistance, am I going to have to touch blood? No. Our blaster's totally cauterized wounds. And he's like, okay, good. I was just a bit worried about that.
May have had some blood anxiety. That's true.
And he's completely over it. Like, he's laughing and like, yeah, this is great. And he's in the Millennium Falcon. He's like, woo, we destroyed that. You know? Oh, wait, is it robots piloting those? No.
Those are your classmates at the academy. And
I like me now.
Can I share a funny story with you? My friend Sean, he was not familiar with the previous movies. He did not... Well, he saw, like, the original trilogy when he was a kid. He barely remembered them. He's teaching English at a studio, and his Japanese student's like, oh, Force Awakens, so good. Episode 7. It's like a new series. He's like, oh, but I have to go watch the original ones. And he's like, oh, no, you don't need to watch them. It's fine. It just picks up, right? Right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think you need to watch the originals to enjoy Episode 7? My friend John goes in there, and he's watching it. He's just like, oh, man. Well, I was just thinking the whole time, what's going on? Where's Darth Vader? Apparently, he's dead. I liked it about as much as I liked A New Hope. In expectations, the ones following will be more interesting.
So I'll agree with that. I think it will be seen as the weakest of that main trilogy. It will be seen as kind of the workman movie of it got us to that point.
Yeah,
rebooted it, started it, that's it.
That hasn't been really done before, has it? Is there a movie you can think of that was like, oh yeah, this is setting up the world and this is really boring and you don't really want to watch this again? I mean, this is a very new kind of thing to reestablish a universe, try to connect multiple generations to characters in a setting and a proper
Didn't the Star Trek movie do that? Because it used all the same characters but made them younger and set it.
But that was an entertaining. I mean, that movie could stand on its own and you could still kind of follow. You didn't.
Oh, you really, mean? Yeah. Okay, yeah. I see what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, so like you're saying, it may not have. You may be able to rewatch it. It might not. It kind of endure. It might not stand the test of time because it did so much repair and fan service that on its own. So the
will it be the weakest of the nine.
I think as long as Phantom Menace is around, I think that's kind of locked down that slot.
Well, yeah, when you compare it to like all nine, you're watching the entire series, will this one hold up? Because you're talking about the longevity of it, and will people retrospectively look at it and think this is just fluff?
I think if somebody were to sit down and watch the nine movies in a row after Empire Strikes Back, they would find that The Force Awakens is so much like A New Hope, eye-rollingly so, that, I mean, they might have a favorite of the two, but they will think it was completely unnecessary to do that as a whole. If you look at the series as a whole, I understand what Jeremy's saying is that it had to do something a little bit special in repairing some fan dislike.
Goodwill.
Repairing fan goodwill. I think if you watch all nine movies together in whatever order you choose, I understand there's some suggested orders to watch it in. I think The Force Awakens will be considered so much like A New Hope that people will wonder why it had to be like, why did it have to have a Starkiller? Why did it have to follow almost beat for beat the storyline of A New Hope? And it will certainly diminish it in time. People will say, well, couldn't you have done that, but maybe not have a big Death Star at the end or something like that? Couldn't you have done that, but maybe not have plans that you have to track down in a droid? Couldn't you have done that, but maybe not use so many of the lines from that movie?
Yeah, I mean, it works now because, as you said, it's definitely trying to repair men whatever wounds were created and try to reestablish it. But that's not going to be the case like a decade from now.
But I guess they don't care because they just need to make the money now.
Right. Oh, and there's going to be so many Star Wars films in 10 years that there's a trilogy? I don't even know.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're just going to be buried by
weakest,
Star Wars.
Weakest ones, Phantom Menace, Rogue One 3, Part 3. I don't know. I don't know why they needed a Part 2 or 3 because they got the plans. Well, they just kept going, having to get the plans for the second Death Star. Then they had to get the plans for the Starkiller. Couldn't they have sent like Rogue 2 or Rogue 3? Boba Fett 5, Han Solo 7, where he's revived after he's stabbed by Kylo Ren.
He fell down a vent and he's hanging from an antenna.
Yeah.
Off the bottom of the Starkiller.
And they repair him.
The explosion sent him off into a ship.
It was a minor gallbladder injury, actually, he suffered.
Well, they send him back into time.
The shockwave that we did not see from the explosion of the Starkiller. Han's riding it now.
I'm making the Kessel Run in less than... beat my time. Oh, speaking of Rogue One, what did you guys think of that trailer?
Yeah, it was all right.
You seem to be a fan of The Force Awakens, but it was all right.
Yeah, it was all right for me.
The interesting thing about Rogue One that we didn't see in Force Awakens. Force Awakens was, this is the new TIE fighter, this is the new X-Wing, this is the new Stormtrooper, is we're going to see them recreating A New Hope set designs and characters. As you know, though, there's Mon Mothma, and you know, like, we're going to be seeing people that we're already familiar with new things thrown in or from different angles.
Those 80s on the beach, man, that's pretty cool, dude.
Yeah, so that'll be a more interesting test of how much people still like Star Wars and the original Star Wars when you go back. Yeah, this is a lower budget movie and they're going to show you the stuff you've already seen
you know versions. How it's going to end too,
right? Yeah, right. So but that's interesting. I'll be interested to see how that feels and how that looks. And without the same budget as The Force Awakens, is there going to be enough action? Is there going to be enough effects? Is it going to be satisfying? Or is a smaller story in the Star Wars universe interesting?
If they have a big mystery on who the father of that main character is, I think that'll be pretty great. It's like, parents?
I'm really I'm not digging her one-liner so far, though. It's like, oh, you're the rebellion? Well, I rebel. And he says, like, her lines are just so bad, man. I hope it is not like that. I want to see more Forrest Whitaker.
It's a bit corny. What did he say? It was like, if...
something gravelly.
Will they break you or something? If they catch you, will they break you or something? Anyway. Well, they've certainly abandoned the everybody with a British accent is bad. Right. Everybody good has an American accent.
Well, maybe she was a bad person and she's rebelling.
Yeah, I'm not really a purist, so it's fine, but wasn't, what are they called? The Bothas?
Bothans.
A lot of Bothans died to get these plans, but we don't see any Bothans in the trailer, so I guess they're just going to be, the ruse. Like, they send in Rogue One, and the Empire totally destroys the Bothans, and the Rogue Ones just get it and get out of there, and they go, wow, like, not one of us are dead, but yeah, shame about the Bothans. Yeah, shame about the Bothans.
A lot of Bothans. Dawson's on that shit.
So she's like,
they gave their lives for these plans.
So the full speech that was given in New Hope was like, a lot of Bothans died for these plans. Fortunately, no humans. So that's a success. Bothan Shield work.
Operation Bothan Shield.
But I guess nobody wants to watch a movie with people with dog faces. You mentioned about Japanese merchandise, and I think we ignored that question.
Yeah, man. Is there anything that you really picked up? Man, I got those little models, those articulate Bandai models.
Oh, mm-hmm. Those are...
Those are so cool. Yeah. They're pretty cheap for a very articulate, well-detailed model. And I went in and painted like,
cheap,
the sticker
sucker. Cheap, but out of range for most kids, I think.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And yeah, it's definitely for the kids, collectors.
Man. You got to realize that we're in this time that we haven't really been before, where we are adults 20, 30, 40 years ago, adults our age, they were expected to be into things other than toys and action movies. You know, a lot of them had careers. They were... involved in wars and stuff, you know, we really hit this time where we can become like extended adolescents, you know.
So you're saying Star Wars wouldn't have been successful with the Greatest Generation? I stormed the beaches of Normandy.
Nah, man. Nah. I mean, so yeah, they don't have this extended fandom like you had. Even when I was a kid, I mean, like a lot of adults liked Star Wars, but not like... you see today. You're wearing a Force Awakens t-shirt. I wouldn't expect anyone your age back in 1980-something to be wearing a t-shirt like that.
Right. Because it wasn't out yet.
Because it wasn't out yet, but a Star Wars t-shirt.
I don't know. Yeah, you might be right. But I think when movies like Star Wars came out, I think a lot of adults liked it.
There was some cool prints, like kind of done Japanese woodblock print style.
Right? Oh, I love the toys that are the like Darth Vader Samurai.
Oh, yeah.
And Stormtrooper Samurai. Yeah, those look nice. But they came out, yeah, well before the
Force
Awakens.
They're just really pretty looking. So I just go to the store and admire them on occasion. I still want to get... I've been collecting the lightsaber chopsticks, but I have yet to get the ones that like light up.
Are they grooved? Because if you have... I don't like chopsticks that aren't grooved.
No, they're not.
Because then things slide off. I mean, I've seen like Star Wars oranges or something, and I don't know if it was in Japan, but it was somewhere. And Star Wars fruit roll-ups. And I mean, it's everywhere. I don't think I've seen any Japanese merchandise that was... particularly outrageous for Star Wars. Mm-hmm. Like you look at it and you go, I mean, you might go, why, but not especially in Japan.
I was surprised how much the merchandising leaned towards female products, cosmetics, and, you know, tissues and, you know, tissue boxes and things that it was interesting because it's not the female characters they're portraying. It's just, you know, Yoda and Darth Vader and just a very standard, but on mascara or lip gloss. Mm-hmm. And so there's nothing feminine about those characters, but the coolness of, or the foreignness of them made them feel they should buy that license. And a lot of the design of it was a lot of kind of very modified or very stylized, you know, versions of those characters to make it a little cuter, but it's still that Star Wars cool.
You mentioning women and Star Wars merchandise makes me think about how hard it was for me to buy or find a Rey figure to buy for my friend's daughter.
Well, wasn't that an issue even outside of Japan?
Like, I think so,
like,
yeah.
Rey not being a toy. But I think
there was like a set of like... Yeah, that had, here are the main characters of Star Wars, and Rey's not in it. So yeah, I was looking for it, and you can get of course you get Poe, you get Finn, you can get, obviously she was around, I eventually found one, but the thing is they didn't really stock her that well.
Yeah.
Because you would see Poe would get three racks, or three hooks, whatever you want to call those, and I'm guessing she had one. There was one that was empty. And
she was the most popular one?
Yeah, exactly. So we're only going to ever give her the one hook.
We're just left with all these Poe figures, whoever the hell that is.
No.
Turns out to be that he's the hottie of the movie.
Is he the hottie?
Yeah.
That's a bit racist. What, Finn can't be the hottie?
He can be a hottie,
because he's black? Is that what you're saying?
No, man. I know.
Or Rey can't be the hottie? Or Aegis? What, Han Solo or Princess Leia? They can't be the hottie? You droidus? What, C-3PO couldn't be the hottie? With the robot?
No, BB-8 is... Oh, well.
Oh, BB-8.
BB-8, man.
I can't say his name, though. BB-88?
BB-8.
BB-8 is the cutest droid that they've ever had.
He walks up and down stairs. I mean, and that's the only... The design was based on, can we move this thing on stairs and will it move on sand? Because...
But can't move on sand.
He did. He can move on sand.
He does in the movie, but yeah. I don't think that...
Well, he probably can't, but yeah.
He can't move on sand. That rolling thing wouldn't be able to move on sand. But Poe, he's a handsome man, but I
don't know. I'm just saying that. I know one of my friends is just really into him.
Really, compared to A New Hope, though, I mean, we are out of that time where obviously Mark Hamill was the young blonde cutie, the kind of more teen idol, you know.
Pre-car accident.
And Han Solo is a swarthy, you know.
Swarthy? You said that before.
Yeah,
like,
just he's got some hair in his chest. He's got a little color.
Does
you know,
he?
Yeah,
does
yeah,
he? Does he have color?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's a brunette, as I'm saying. But, you know, he's...
swarthy.
But just, you know, a little bit dangerous or, you know, that kind of playboy. He's kind of a playboy character.
Yeah, dangerous. Yeah, I agree
and
with that.
None of the characters in Force Awakens portray any of that. I mean, mostly because they're young, but...
Poe actually is swarthy.
Yeah, but not... I mean...
He's not so much the bad boy, though.
Yeah, we didn't see him, but we didn't see him interacting with women. We saw
he didn't
him tortured.
Shave.
Well, I think, like, him and Finn got this... They got a little bromance going on there.
I think with, was it Oscar Isaacs? Is that the name?
Yeah.
Poe? They're definitely trying to, even more so than the original trilogy, is trying to play up his sex appeal.
Really?
Like, he doesn't shave, you know, unshaven, you know, ruggedly handsome, kind of has that banner, you know, what banter, like, you know, am I supposed to speak? You're supposed to speak, that kind of thing. You know, resists the torture. You know, oh, I didn't know. And he's the best pilot in the galaxy and best spy, apparently.
Well, he's the best pilot and everyone else sucks at spying.
Yeah. Well, let's give it to Poe. Yeah,
they ran out of Bonth.
Yeah, we have no more Bonths to like divert the attention. Yeah, definitely Finn was not played up for sex appeal. Even though like when you watch Attack the Block is the only other movie I've seen him in.
He's cool.
Yeah, he's very very cool in that. And then here he's played. I found him very appealing, but he's played more for laughs.
Right.
Which is a bit jarring to his character arc, and you just have to really ignore what they're trying to do with him, because it was pretty much, let's get him where he can be the funny person. Give Rey a best friend.
I don't know if he's going to be a funny person, because, like, he picked up the lightsaber. He's trying to, like, I think he's going to turn into some kind of badass, man.
Oh, he might, but I think he's going to be secondary to Poe and Rey in the terms of badassery.
I don't know, man. Poe is just, like, kind of, he's, like, support.
People have responded so well to Poe, and this gets back way in the beginning of this episode, talking about like the corporate mentality and that, it's people have responded so well to Poe, and Oscar Isaac's star is definitely on the rise, is that he's definitely going to get more screen time. We're going to see more of him, and they're probably rewriting the scripts.
I would love to see more of Finn, though, honestly, because I think that's more interesting.
I like him as well, but
he's just some pilot for the resistance.
Yeah, but he doesn't have a mystery box. Like, Rey's got a mystery box, so she's going to get, of course, lots of time, and she's the star.
Finn doesn't have a mystery box?
Well, what do we need to know about him?
Yeah, I guess so. We do.
He's actually very traditional in a Star Wars sense, and it's that they took me away from my parents. Great, we don't need to know who they are. But it's like he references, he tells you his story. They took me away from my parents, and I was raised as a stormtrooper. I'm here now. Hey, do you have a boyfriend? So it's like kind of gets you right into the pulpy thing. He's very, very much a Star Wars character.
But immediately friend zoned.
Well, exactly.
I said, Force Awakens, I would love to see Poe with the Force and do something like that.
Poe or no, you mean Finn?
Oh, Finn. Yeah, I would love to see Finn use the Force.
Yeah.
I want to see him get better at using that lightsaber, man.
Well, it's interesting that he had the lightsaber, or was given the lightsaber, and that little creature, Maz, whatever. Yeah. She's like, well, you have a weapon. So it's like, oh, so he can use it.
But Finn being Force sensitive, he touched that lightsaber and nothing. Like, you know, he immediately fought with it. And whereas Ren, you know, had her huge flashback sequence. I mean, then that may have to do with their
connection,
genealogy, or like who they're related to, and who's how they're related to.
Yeah, but the thing is, why didn't Luke Skywalker have that same thing when he touched his father's lightsaber for the first time, which was the same lightsaber?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, right. Yeah, he held it and just turned it on and.
Wow, lightsaber.
Yeah.
So maybe.
Why not? Because J.J. Abrams didn't direct The New Hope.
I guess so.
Where they have to drop the mission. It goes, whoa.
Was it conceived, Anakin? Man.
I see.
It's got more midichlorians in her body.
It's my dad's face and Darth Vader's face. Why? How do I know that? Are you sure he killed him? That would be Abrams' thing, where he would be like, what really happened to my father? And Ben Kenobi would go, oh, that's a story for another time. Why not now in this long space flight? Oh, I don't know. It's like, even Game of Thrones does that. It's so annoying. It's, you know, Ned Stark's like, oh, John, I'm going to talk to you about your mom when I get back. And, you know, like, John Snow's like, whoa, why not now? You know, it's just like, why don't you tell me now? And he's like, no, when I get back, you know. you know, I probably won't be beheaded.
Was it J.J. Abrams and even George R.R. Martin? And they're both like, we're TV writers, and that's how they...
There you go. You've saw that The Force Awakens is just going to be like, it's a soap opera.
It's a soap opera. It's not a space soap opera.
No, space. And on that note, stay tuned for more Shane. Sorry, I don't know. Soap operas don't do that, do they? They just kind of like go, but who is my father? Think about how The Force Awakens, that's what it is. It's a soap opera. Because think about how The Force Awakens ends, where it's that long thing. And anybody who's ever watched Young and the Restless realizes there's Victor. What are you doing here? And then they just stare at each other. And then the camera goes out. That's what it is. It was like... Luke Skywalker probably had that line, like, what are you doing here? Is that my lightsaber or something like that? Or where's my hand? Came with a hand. What happened to that?
How freaking time you showed up.
Yeah. But they probably just cut that line because they thought, oh, too much Young and the Restless. But they still, like, let's just stare at each other for a while.
And I'm just going to hold
And then
this.
The helicopter goes, yeah, no.
You going to take this?
So far.
Are you going to take it? I'm going to stand here all day. She was standing there for at least like 5 minutes, man.
Her arm's getting tired.
I would have walked up and just like hit her in the head with it.
There was a lot of things that a normal person would have done. They wouldn't have hold out something. You ever do that to somebody? You're holding out something and they're 15 feet away. She's like, yeah, here you go. And they're going to be looking at you. Are you handing that to me?
I mean, did they want Luke to be that mysterious? Why wasn't the last shot him taking it? Like, you know, at least their hands, like a baton pass, you know, him actually touching it so that they're connected, they're met, and then, that, you know, so that was odd. I mean, I guess they just want Luke Skywalker's reveal in this movie to be mysterious and be amazed by how much facial hair Mark Hamill could
grow. He did kind of look like a boffin.
Yeah. I didn't like that end scene. We were just like, okay, whatever. Man, Mark Hamill opens the script and he's like, I think I'm missing the last page. You know, the page I'm actually saying something. No, you just stand there. All right, well, that's a paycheck. Easy.
What did Harrison Ford get on this movie?
If it was a Japanese movie, he would have not turned around and then monologued.
All right.
But it wasn't, so he turns around and didn't monologue, just stared. So it was Young and the Restless. So I guess talking about the ending of The Force Awakens is a good time to end this episode. Well, thank you for joining us again. Or if it's the first time, thank you for joining us for the first time. Bye.
Bye.
Drive-Thru RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive-Thru RPG. The one true source for RPGs.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.